Welcome to Parents' Perspective. You guys have got to come out of the street, Wesley's mom called out the door. That's no place to play ball. She sighed as she looked at the vacant lot across the street, and once again she noted that the boys really didn't have an appropriate place to play. The lot's grass hadn't been cut since she could remember, and old bricks, broken bottles, and trash were strewn everywhere. Why doesn't the city do something? She wondered. From a parent's perspective, how can we be effective advocates for change in our own communities? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today, we're lucky to have as our guest a very committed public advocate for children and families. Mark Kennedy Shriver, a member of the Maryland House of Delegates, comes from a family long steeped in a tradition of public advocacy. He serves on commissions and committees for a number of important projects and has received several awards for his work. Mark and his wife, Jean, have two young children, a boy and a girl. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
You've been a strong advocate of family issues in your public life. What led you in that direction?
My mother and father have been terrific examples. My mother started Special Olympics, and my father has done a lot of work in the federal government, but also in the nonprofit world as well. And it seemed to always be focused on families, be focused on young children, be focused at those that really do need help. And they have really been terrific role models, terrific examples of how to get public involvement, but also private sector involvement. And it always does seem to have focused on families and on children. So hopefully the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. So I've used them as role models. And really, it's been incredibly rewarding, the work that I've been involved in as well.
Did they ever try to pull you into their causes, or how did they direct
you?
No,
they really never put any pressure. I think, just the fact that they're great examples, and I have great respect for both of them, and the fact that they're trying to help communities by helping families. And when you look at successful communities, you look at what the bedrock of that foundation is, and it really is strong families, families that are supported by government policies, families that are supported by the community, whether it's a nonprofit or whether it is government policies or government efforts. So when you look at those examples, that really encouraged me to get involved in that area. But there was never really any overt pressure. It was just the fact that they got up and went to work every day, and they were focused on family-oriented policies and family-oriented programs.
It's interesting. It's an example of how we teach our children, do as I do, not necessarily as I say.
Absolutely. The fact that they got up every day and went to work, never, were sick, and the fact that they did it on a daily basis and did it actively and aggressively really did set a good example.
Why is it worth it for parents to use their precious time? Everybody feels very stressed about what they're going to do with their time to advocate for community causes.
I'm in the Maryland House of Delegates, as Linda mentioned a couple minutes ago. And the policies and the ideas that I think have been my most successful efforts over the last 6 years have all come as a result of a mother or a father, or in some cases, both parents coming in saying, this is the problem that my child is having. This is the problem that our community is having. Will you help us do it? I'd like to think that the good ideas that I've worked on are my own ideas, but they're not. They come as a result of letters, emails, phone calls, letters to the editor I read in the newspaper, that parents come forward and say, this is a problem. And when you see that and when you talk to them and it's really a human issue affecting their family, then public servants, if they're good, public officials, if they're good, will respond to that. And that really is the reason I think families should get involved, parents should get involved. Everybody's under incredible stress as far as jobs, as far as family commitments. But if they get involved and they make it personal, public officials will respond because that's what they're elected to do. And if they don't respond, they ought not to be reelected, to be honest with you.
Can you give an example of something
that you saw
in the newspaper or something that you heard?
Yep. One mother came in, talked to me, Shelley Cram, who lives here in Potomac, Maryland, which is one of the areas I represent, came into my office and said that her daughter, Hadley, who was at that point four and has cerebral palsy, could not play on playgrounds with her older sister, Sarah. And I said, why not? And she said, well, because there are wood chips in the playground and Hadley has a walker and she cannot literally take her walker or her wheelchair and get to the playground equipment through the wood chips. And even if she could get to the playground equipment, the equipment was not designed to support kids that had disabilities. And she said it really upset her, and it was unjust, actually, that her two kids couldn't play together, that the equipment was not designed to accommodate kids with special needs. And she said we ought to do something about that. There are a couple of playgrounds in the state, or in the Northeast, rather, that are handicap accessible and are designed to accommodate kids with special needs. And I said, well, let's do one here in Maryland. She said, well, that's exactly what I want to do. So we worked together, got the community involved, got her synagogue involved, got restaurants in the area involved. And it was really a community-based grassroots lobbying effort to secure the money to build the first truly handicap accessible playground in the state of Maryland. And it was all the result of one mother coming in and saying she had an idea. She had done some research. She had found out what playground equipment was available for kids with disabilities and how to design that. And as a result of Shelley Cram's effort, not only have we built one here in Potomac, Maryland, but the governor, Paris Glendening, committed $1 million to build 11 of these playgrounds across the state of Maryland. And Maryland is now the first state in the country that has these playgrounds all across the state. And as a result of Shelley's work, not only are they statewide in Maryland, but four other states are now looking to do the exact same statewide initiative. And that's all the result of a mother coming in, seeing that her kid could not play with her older sister. And just as importantly is the fact that now kids are playing together side by side with other children with disabilities. And that's breaking down the walls of misunderstanding between children, but also adults. If adults sees that a kid with a disability has the same needs and desires as their children, able-bodied children, then you can turn around and start breaking down the walls of misunderstanding between families and communities. And ultimately, I think not only will kids be having fun, but communities will have a better understanding of the needs of kids with disabilities. And that's all the result of one mother coming forward and saying she needed help.
I've been over to that playground several times, and the most striking thing to me was exactly what you just stated. All kinds of children are playing there together.
Yes.
And not thinking so much about, oh, well, that one's in a wheelchair. That one's just part of whatever it is they're doing.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that breaks down misunderstanding and miscommunication. And I think ultimately will have an impact when those little 4 and 5-year-old kids are 25, 30 years old. I would also just reemphasize that Shelley came forward and we had that meeting. But her husband, Kenny, who is a pharmacist in Washington, D.C., really did play a critical role in supporting Shelley and the whole family as they raised the money to build that park. It really was a team effort. So, you talk about my folks and the role models they gave. Shelley and Kenny Cram both give a wonderful example of parents working together on behalf of their children and changing the way public dollars are spent here in Maryland. And it's having an impact.
Sounds like they came to the right person for a little help, though.
it's great public policy, and it's the right thing to do. So I was happy to get involved. It was a great effort, and it's a great statewide effort.
I know that you've worked on a number of different kinds of issues that you found are receptive to public pressure. One of them, for example, was parents who don't pay their child support.
Yes.
And would you talk a little bit about other issues?
Sure. I mean, one of the issues I heard from a number of mothers, in this case, single mothers whose father, delinquent father, had not paid their child support payment. And after hearing from a number of parents that this was a major issue, I researched what other states had done. And in Maine, they had threatened to suspend the driver's license of parents who were 60 days or more in arrears, behind in their child support payments. And we passed that bill here in Maryland in 1995, a year before the federal government passed the comprehensive welfare reform. And as a result of those conversations with mothers who were telling me that they were not getting the child support that they needed to raise their kids, we passed that bill. And in the last, or I guess in the first 2.5 years, we've raised over $170 million in back child support payments from parents. Unfortunately, a majority of them are fathers who owed those dollars. And again, it was the result of a series of conversations of parents coming forward and saying, we need these resources for our children. We need to make changes in order to provide better resources for our kids. And fortunately, we got that bill passed. And people, it's amazing and sad, quite frankly, when parents will pay child support because their driver's license is threatened, when they should be doing that anyways. But the right to drive is not a right, it's a privilege. And what we're saying here in Maryland is, pay your child support payments, support your kids, and you'll get the privilege to drive. If you don't support your kids, then you don't get the privilege to drive. It's not a right, it's a privilege, and we're going to revoke that or suspend it if you don't do what you're supposed to do by your kids.
so unfortunate it has to come to that. It's like treating adults like children, but there isn't another way.
It's discouraging. On the other hand, the good news is we've raised over $170 million that would not have been coming forward for those kids, and it's had a profound impact on a number of families. I've met a number of them that enable their children to go to college as a result of the support in the home to subsidize the children's going through high school and really now being able to get to college in a number of cases. So it's great. I mean, that's the good news. The bad news is that we had to take those steps, but the good news is we're moving in the right direction.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on how parents can work for change on family issues in their communities.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we're talking with Mark Shriver about parent advocacy on behalf of their children.
We also know you've been appointed to a presidential commission.
Yes, it was a commission that my mother started with my uncle in the early 60s. President Kennedy created the President's Council on Mental Retardation, I would say with a gentle nudge from my mother. I don't know how gentle it was, but the committee is established, and it gives recommendations to the President and Congress about the needs of people with mental retardation. And I was appointed to that by President Clinton, and very excited to be on that. Make a contribution, I hope, for the needs and the rights of people with mental retardation.
Are you finding that there are special issues that are coming up now about children with mental retardation that hadn't come up before?
Well, the committee will look at the needs of not only children with mental retardation, but also adults with mental retardation. One of the big issues that has surfaced not only here in Maryland, but also on a national scale, is the housing needs for people with mental retardation. As their parents get older and older and are less able to provide for them, housing becomes a very real issue. And in many cases, when the parents die and the kids are then not, frankly, kids, they're adults, are then out on their own. So one of the big issues is how to provide loans, low-interest loans or no-interest loans, to adults with mental retardation so that they can live like the rest of us can.
Are you finding any other issues that are coming up, particularly with families that really need parents to come forward as advocates?
Well, I mean, you know, there's a great example, again, of another woman who lives in Potomac, Maryland, named Joyce Lippman, whose daughter is an adult with mental retardation. And the issue was, as she became older and older, and Joyce and her husband wanted to provide a situation where she could go out and live on her own, which is what most parents want to do for their children so that the children can go out and have their own life. And it's no different than it is for people with mental retardation in those families. And Joyce advocated very strongly with another woman in Gaithersburg, Maryland, Barbara Tirico, to eliminate what's called the waiting list and to put pressure on the governor of the state to provide the resources for people when they are adults to have their own homes. And they live in either group homes or rental units. And those parents and those families got together and said, we need to put pressure on the governor. And they lobbied year after year until a couple of years ago when the governor committed the resources to provide housing for all people who are on a waiting list, which means essentially that they are waiting to get into a placement through group homes here in Montgomery County and in the state of Maryland. And there's a wonderful example of a couple of parents saying, look, our kids are getting older. We don't know how to provide for them when we pass away. We don't have the resources. The state has the responsibility and should step forward and do that. And after years and years of lobbying, it happened. And it's, again, the example of parents getting together and saying this is an important issue for our children.
But they still need guidance in paying bills and paying taxes and all those things.
And that does happen. There are family support for that, and there are also program support. And it depends on really the needs of the individual with mental retardation. Some do need help on paying taxes. Some need occasional, you know, whether it's once a day or twice a day, somebody just to check in and make sure that they're doing fine in their own rental unit or in their own housing unit. Some only need a stop by maybe once every other day or once a week. But the support systems need to be in place across the community and across the state. And as a result, the community is stronger. Because people see that people with mental retardation are just like everyone else. They have the same needs and desires. And they want the same thing, to be acknowledged and to be respected in the community. And it makes the community stronger.
Mark, for parents who are novices at this whole process of advocacy, What's the best way for them to begin?
The best way is to get involved. There's a famous quote, which I'm going to butcher, and I cannot remember who said it, but it went to the effect, don't ever underestimate the power of a few committed individuals, because when you look at change, it's really the result of a few committed individuals. And if a parent or parents believe strongly in an issue that affects their children, whether it's national issues like gun control or whether it's a small local issue, seemingly a small local issue like building a park where their handicapped child can get involved, they've got to make a phone call. They've got to write or call, and they need to be persistent. If you believe passionately in something and you get involved by calling your legislator, whether it's state or local or federal official, and stay passionate about that, you can have a profound impact.
So that's where you start?
Absolutely. I would definitely call your local county council person, the local mayor, talk to your state rep. Sometimes the jurisdictional issues, whether it's the state government or the federal government or the county government, who should be paying for it, needs to be worked out. But politicians, if they're good, listen to people. And they understand that the ideas that are coming forward from a committed parent are something they should look at and address. And if you believe that that's why you're elected is to, you know, help people, you know, it's a pretty good combination. A parent calls you up and say, this is a problem, help me out. That's what you're elected to do. It's not a terribly complex idea. It's representative democracy,
that's
what you hope for.
What would be the next step? They've called this person 3 or 4 times. This person said, fine, talk to my assistant. That's very nice.
Write him a letter and follow up. I ran a program for juvenile delinquent kids in Baltimore City, and I was trying desperately to get publicity for it in order to build a broad base of support, not only in the state government, but also on from the private sector as well. And I tried to get what I thought was an influential writer to come down and write about the program. And this person said, no. And every week I called the secretary for 53 weeks. And on the 53rd week, the guy showed up and wrote a great article about it, which we used to publicize the good work that we were doing. But every week for 53 weeks, I'm not lying to you, I know the secretary and I were on a first-name basis, but you just got to continue to be persistent on that. And unfortunately, or I hope it would never get to the stage where you'd have to do that long a process, but it's follow-up and it's determination. And if you believe strongly in it, they'll figure it out eventually. And I think if you also look at building a coalition of people, I wouldn't do it just by yourself. I would look at, as we did with Shelley Cram and the Hadley's Park people, we got the restaurants, we got local businesses involved, all to help raise money to meet the private sector match for the state dollars. There was a state commitment, but in order to get the state dollars, the private sector had to come forward. And we built a very strong coalition. Shelley's congregation came forward and helped raise money. And as a result of building a very broad coalition, the people down in Annapolis said, well, these guys not only have support in the community, but it really does make good sense. And that way we help sway the other legislators to support that initiative.
So it sounds like they need to not only follow up and maybe write things down, but also bring in other people and then ultimately have some kind of a battle plan.
Yes. I mean, it's like getting into a new business. You need a business plan. You need a plan of attack that you will write letters and emails, but you'll also have other people support that, whether it's nonprofits in the community, whether it is other businesses in the community. Maybe you can get the local newspaper to write an article about the efforts you're working on. And you then take that article, clip it, Xerox it, and send it to the legislator and say, this is the issue we're talking about. And as a matter of fact, you try to get it on radio and you talk about it on radio. I think the great thing is the newspaper, because you can Xerox that and send it to somebody. You can try to get on the local news and send a videotape of that to the legislator or to whatever the nonprofit is that you're trying to get help from. So you want to build a broad base of support, which shows that it's a relevant issue, that shows that it impacts just more than one or two people. But you want to build that coalition of people, whether it's the media, whether it's the nonprofits, whether it's the business community, bring them all together to address an area, and that will make the politicians or political leadership really recognize that it's important.
So if you have an issue and you need to round up other people to help you out, those other people are going to have an assortment of talents. Some of them will know how to go, for example, to a business leader or a church leader and help you get support.
That's correct. And it makes you stronger. It makes your initiative stronger. And it shows that it really does matter to the whole community, and that's really an area that politicians will listen to.
I guess what I want to bring up, and sort of to reassure parents who are listening, is that just because you raise the issue doesn't mean you have to be the expert who can share all the information and get all the support you need alone.
There are other resources out there, and there are other people. In many cases, as we found out with Shelley Cram and the Hadley's Park people, there were other parents out there who also were frustrated by the fact that their children couldn't play on the playground equipment. And we started tapping into those resources, and there ended up being landscape designers that were involved and who had children that could not participate in playgrounds. And you started tapping into their abilities. And we had parents whose children were disabled who were in the media. And you started to bring together all of these different synergies. And as a result, it was a much stronger group. So you don't need to feel like you have to do it all by yourself or that you're the only person that's out there with knowledge on it, because there are people out there that want to help you. They just need to have somebody cause that first step or create that first step. And as a result, get the ball moving.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on how parents can work for change on family issues in their communities.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parent's Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. Today, we are talking with Mark Shriver about parent advocacy on behalf of their children.
It sounds like if you're a member or have contacts with any organization, be it religious or community or anything, that's a good thing to start with to pull people in, so you don't have to just rely on your friends or people at work.
Yes. I mean, I think that, whatever organization or support systems that you can tap into and that can support you are always key to that. And it will always be helpful to you, no question about it. I mean, it's the old adage that there's no I in team. If you're all by yourself, what you need to do is to build a little team of support with you, and they will create a lot of the encouragement that and support that will be successful.
Okay. One of the things that people do run up against, and we touched on this a little bit before, is a bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. Do you have any words of advice or encouragement for people who run up against a bureaucracy? Oh, no, this is not my department. You have to see so-and-so. And no, that's not my department. You have to see so-and-so.
I think it's very discouraging when you get bumped around. And, I've had that experience myself when I ran a nonprofit. And I guess the best advice I can give you is to build a strong base of support. Get as many people involved as you can, and then work doggedly on it. Bureaucracy, by their nature, if people are in the public sector, they're not there to try to stonewall you or brickwall you. They really do want to work with you. And sometimes it's just the system is not set up properly. But I think you just need to be really determined. You need to work with others, and you need to take a positive approach, even if you get bumped around from group to group or from agency to agency. You need to stay determined, you need to stay focused, and you need to rely on your supporters to help you out. Don't be afraid, and don't take no for an answer. Bang your head against the wall 3 times, figure out a way to go around the wall, and just rely on other people for ideas and work hard at it.
Your example of calling 53 weeks in a row.
Right.
It's a good example because it means if you stick with something, usually you get somewhere.
And it had a big impact on our program. It really did that newspaper article.
Does it also make sense to maybe try to focus your work on 2 or 3 different places rather than rely on this one fellow to come through?
Yeah, I mean, I think you do want to have a couple of different initiatives happening at the same time, a couple of different conversations happening. I just did not rely on that one newspaper article. We had a series of other people who were, I thought, less influential, but who also could write about a program I started. On the other hand, I think you need to remain focused. If you have too many balls in the air or if you're scattered too much, then I think your effectiveness really comes into question. So I think you need to figure out the 3 or 4 avenues that you want to pursue, get support from that, have a number of people working with you on that, but stay very focused. If you become too spread out and too thin, I think ultimately your effectiveness really does get compromised. So I would encourage parents to build a team of support to identify a couple of areas that you really want to focus in on your resources. Realize that you have to adjust, but don't become so spread out that you lose your effectiveness.
Mark, what other issues have you been involved with? I think adoption is one of them.
Yes. Again, we've seen a terrific example of parents coming forward with an idea and saying there's legislation that needs to be enacted in order to change present injustice. A parent came up to me and said that they had adopted a child, and when they went to take paid leave to deal with the child that just came into their life, they were told that adoption was not covered. Only birth parents were covered for the paid leave. And we researched that issue and found out that not only was the family right, but that no other state in the country actually had it a requirement that if you adopted a child and your company provided paid leave for a birth parent, they ought to provide the same paid leave for an adopting parent. Obviously, a child at 3 o'clock in the morning that's a newborn is going to cry. They don't know that they're adopted. And the parent has to go through the same bonding process, the same adjustment processes that a birth parent does. So this family came forward, said this is an injustice. We passed the legislation, and now in Maryland, if you adopt and your company provides paid leave for a birth parent, they have to provide that same paid leave for an adopting parent or parents. And what we see, again, is an example of parents saying this is not fair, went out and contacted a legislator. And in this particular case, they contacted a number of legislators before getting a hold of my office. We were lucky that it resonated with the woman who works with me, Jeanna May, and we talked about the issue, and she really did a lot of the legwork on it, and we now, in the state of Maryland, are the first state that provides that legislation that provides equity for adopting parents as well as birth parents. And again, the parent made a number of phone calls. They worked, not only the mother worked on the issue, but the mother and the father worked on the issue. And it's made a difference, and it really is a positive contribution because a parent got involved, didn't take no for an answer from one or two legislators, but kept at it and changed the law.
Our thanks to Mark Shriver for being with us today. You've given a lot of encouragement to potential parent advocates, and you've given them some information to help them get moving. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors is available at all major bookstores and on the web. For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, just send a $5 check or money order to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. That's P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
It's very important to us to hear from our listeners. How is Parents Perspective helpful to you? You can email us at parentsper@aol.com. That's parentsper@aol.com. Or you can write to us at our post office box address. You can learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, by visiting our shortcut address on the web, http://i.am/parentsperspective, all one word. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our special thanks today to SunTrust Bank for generous support for today's program. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.